Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me still after 7 years this month.
Wow, sunrise, sunset, man. We're still giving this away? We should start charging these people for this.
I was just reading about that today.
The seven-year part?
No, about the charging. Some believe that you need like 20,000 subscribers to monetize. I don't think we're up there yet.
Wait, who came up with that figure?
Someone at the Public Radio Exchange.
Okay.
So what's what material do you use to celebrate 7 years? Is that tin?
I don't know. What's silver?
Isn't it 20?
I don't know.
Maybe it's hemp for seven.
Hemp. Yeah. How appropriate. Hemp.
That's how we're feeling today.
Neither Dave nor I have ever indulged.
Today, though, we're not talking about hemp. We're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on November 20th, 2014, titled Why Did Mayor Emanuel Stonewall the Tribune?
Oh, yes. Yes.
In this article, you recap the recent Chicago Tribune series.
Ah, brilliant series.
That exposes the risky financial deals in which the Chicago Public Schools system has engaged.
That is correct.
In the last 10 years.
Got to give the Tribune credit. I'm always ripping them, so I only owed it to the world to praise them when they do something good.
It was a good series. Let me give a few of the highlights. According to the Tribune.
Wait, first of all, let's give a shout out to the writers. And their names are?
Gellers.
Very good. I'll give you credit for that. Heather is her first name.
And I can't remember the guy's name.
Jason.
Jason what?
Grotto.
All right. According to the Tribune, the city issued, quote, $1 billion in auction rate debt paired with interest rate swaps that will likely cost $100 million more than what the school district would have paid for traditional fixed rates debt.
At least $100 million more. It's a conservative estimate. Nobody really knows for certain except for the bankers themselves.
But that number is kind of controversial. And reacting to the furor over the controversy, Mayor Rahm Emanuel said, quote, under my tenure, there have been no swaps, unquote. However, the Trib reported, quote, the city of Chicago has entered into at least four interest rate swaps under the Emanuel administration, end quote. The Trib went on, the records obtained by the Tribune show new contracts with new banks layered on top of existing swaps, in effect creating double swaps on the old debt. And then they say in three of the four cases, the Emanuel administration was trading a more predictable arrangement for a less predictable one, which another expert called definitely riskier.
Definitely so.
So I'm wondering how the electorate provides oversight in these situations. The risky deals were made possible first by the state legislature, which passed enabling legislation in 2003, and secondly by the Chicago Board of Education. What is a citizen to do?
What is a citizen, other than leave Chicago?
Well, presuming you want to stick around.
Other than oust the current incumbent? Other than those 2 points, I don't know what you can do. I mean, the part of the series that interested me the most, I should say, was not just the risky venture itself, which is a complicated form of borrowing in which you're sort of betting against the market or gambling against the market, but was Mayor Emanuel's reaction to the Tribune when they came looking for information and he stonewalled them to try to conceal the information. So on one hand, it didn't happen on his watch. Then why is he so determined to keep the Tribune and the public from knowing what's going on? And this gets to the heart of your question for the discerning electorate who's worried about undue finances on basic borrowing, bonding programs, you know, that you need to rebuild your streets or build new schools or just any kind of basic essential capital projects. We should have a whole new approach. I don't know what else to say. It seems as though this follows the trend of what I was talking about, where there's too many investment bankers in city government. So there's too many people who come from the investment community, spend time here in between jobs in the investment community, are cultivating contacts and friendships and favors with the investment community. I just saw this. You got me on a riff here, Dave. Today's New York Times had an essay by a columnist whose name I cannot remember, but he was defending an investment banker who had been criticized by Senator Elizabeth Warren. He was saying how unfair it was for her to criticize this investment banker just because he comes from Wall Street and was getting appointed to a Treasury Department post. And I think what he misunderstood, embedded in Elizabeth Warren's criticism, was that most of these oversight jobs could be filled by people who are every bit as smart as any investment banker. They just come at it from a different point of view, which is protecting the public purse. And there are people like that, public interest lawyers, for instance, who are every bit as smart as the corporate lawyers that they face. Making a lot of money is just not the only indicator of intelligence.
We talked about this with respect to the new city council position created to advise the city council on budget issues, the budget analyst job.
Which still has not been filled yet.
And we talked about the fact that someone could be hired for that job that doesn't have, say, an accounting background. It just needs someone who is able to ask questions and a critical thinker.
A critical thinker. You bring in your experts to advise you. For instance, the two reporters for the Tribune, I don't know them, never met them. So I don't know if they have a financial background. But what they did was they rounded up experts and they interviewed experts who commented on the evidence that they, the Tribune, had gathered from Mayor Rahm, ripped from his paws, as I wrote, or something like that. So it's possible for everybody to have their advisors and experts. Even the experts have their advisors and experts. So this notion that only somebody who comes from Wall Street or comes from LaSalle Street or comes from that other side of the table, so to speak, can advise you is erroneous. It puts you in a bad position. I would like the person who is looking out for the public to sort of come from the community of watchdogs as opposed to coming from the other community that the watchdogs are watching.
The kennel of watchdogs.
Yes.
Let's talk about a related story. Last month, Mayor Emanuel announced a multi-million dollar expansion of pre-K for four-year-olds.
I'll be writing about this.
This program is funded through a scheme known as Pay for Success,
yes,
using so-called social impact bonds. Essentially, CPS, Chicago Public Schools, will expand pre-K by betting against several investors. The investors pay for the expansion, and if the kids test well in succeeding years, the investors get paid back with interest. If the kids don't test well, the investors don't get paid back. The investors include Goldman Sachs, Northern Trust, and the Pritzker Family Foundation. And the scheme was hatched out of the Harvard Kennedy School's Social Impact Bond Lab, which, according to the mayor's office, quote, provides pro bono technical assistance to state and local governments interested in pursuing pay for success and social impact bond contracts, end quote. Proponents say that the funding scheme transfers risk of the pre-K program's failure to investors. Opponents say that pre-K programs are generally effective, not failure prone, so there's no need to wager on the risk. And then lastly, this has been tried once before. Last year, the investors funded a sort of pilot in the Salt Lake City area. According to a Goldman Sachs fact sheet, the investors make per student payments each year from pre-K through sixth grade. Every student who tests well each year causes the per student fee to be paid back to the investors. And after sixth grade, each student who tests well causes an additional 40% of the per student fee to be paid to the investors each year. So that's the profit. So what is your reaction generally to this program?
Well, I have not explored the specifics of this. I will be writing about this. I feel like I'm scooping myself.
Just don't listen to it.
Yeah. When I did what you did, which was to read the accounts in the paper and listen to the scintillating debate from the floor of the city council, I was immediately suspicious. Again, this goes back to the issue that we were just discussing, and that is this, that if we as people in society believe that we should finance pre-K programs because it's for the benefit of the children, then we should do that. And we shouldn't set up this cockamamie Rube Goldberg scheme where our financing is dependent on a test score. So in other words, that if they go up, we can pay for it with money saved from other programs. Essentially, what they're telling me is they're going to be siphoning off money that would otherwise go to other programs in education to pay back the money that be going for pre-K, as though pre-K in itself was going to eradicate the need for these other programs. So I think that's a phony supposition to start off with. In Chicago, what they talked about is that if you have a healthy, vibrant pre-K program, we would not need special education money. I believe that's the pie that they'll be taking from. Well, how do you know that? Why would one eradicate the other?
It's a hypothesis.
It's a hypothesis. And furthermore, maybe I don't want to take that special ed money and give it to a banker. Maybe I'd rather, if we're not using the special ed money, use it to pay for the chess team that I've been clamoring for. The city seems broke, too broke to pay for. Or maybe I think we should have some art teachers or a music program or a drama program. Why would I be allowing my money, my special K money, to go to bankers?
So, Special ed.
Did I say special K?
Yeah.
I have breakfast on my mind.
It's still early.
That's my initial reaction to that. I'm very skeptical of it. I think this underscores the point that we were talking about earlier, that we need more vigorous, critical thinkers in positions of power and authority in the city of Chicago to protect the public purse and look out for the programs that these monies are supposed to go to, as opposed to try to devise these cockamamie schemes that benefit the people they may ultimately end up working with or for.
Just to clarify with the point you were making, the sort of house of cards on which this is built is that the designers of this scheme say that if students go to pre-K as opposed to not going to pre-K, then their progress in later years will not require them to go into some special education programs to get assistance.
That's correct.
And so the idea there then is that overall, the system is saving money by sending them to pre-K. So the idea of paying back the investors is from the savings of not sending them to special ed.
It's not even saving. You're basically saying, we're going to take money out of the special ed program. We're going to give it to the bankers. It's not, quote unquote, a savings to taxpayers. We're still spending the same amount of money. To me, it's counterproductive. I feel we shouldn't be investing in students, not in investment bankers.
Put that on a bumper sticker. Connected to this school funding scheme is the City of Chicago budget, which the City Council just passed, with just 4 of 50 aldermen voting no.
Yeah.
The approved budget is based largely on the mayor's budget proposal, which he unveiled in October, and which you anticipated in your reader article on October 2nd, 2014, titled, "In Claiming a Balanced Budget, What is Rahm Smoking?" In that article,
that was like a pretty good headline.
Yeah, in that article, keeping with the hemp theme, in that article, you took issue with Mayor Emanuel's claim to have balanced the city's budget for the last 3 years while holding the line on taxes. Connected to the school funding scheme we were just talking about is a borrowing trick that the mayor's budget relies on, something that financial experts call scoop and toss. Here's one example of scoop and toss cited by the Civic Federation. Instead of paying off $121 million worth of bonds that come due in 2015, the city refinanced them in 2013. This will cost the city $229 million extra in interest over 30 years. And the Federation says details of these transactions weren't included in the mayor's 2015 budget proposal. So here we have another situation of taxpayers giving money to investors. You alluded to this earlier, and my question is it a coincidence that we're now seeing financial sector professionals, you said investment bankers, in key government leadership positions, namely the Chicago mayor,
yes,
the Chicago school board president, now the Illinois governor?
This is actually a topic that I addressed in a column, which I don't believe we talked about, the invasion of the investment bankers, where I went down the list. There's several of them. There's also the city comptroller, the new treasurer. So pretty much everybody who monitors how our local government spends its money comes from this side. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think this is a trend. This is where Mayor Rahm's going. This is what he thinks is a good idea.
It's where he comes from.
We've had this conversation before. I think he has contempt for people who are on the other side of the fence, so to speak, like the Ralph Naders of the world. You know, I mean, why couldn't Ralph Nader type be overseeing these programs? You know, a real watchdog. Mayor Emanuel, before he was mayor, Congressman Emanuel, the head of the Congressional Democratic Caucus, he always has had contempt for the left wing of his Democratic Party. He presumes that they're just going to stay Democrat because they have no choice. And he has obviously a greater appreciation for moneymakers who could go Democrat or could go Republican, and he presumes that to bring them into the Democratic tent is an overall gain. And so when it comes to monitoring government, I think that leaves us at a huge disadvantage because the interests are not always the same. The interest of you, the taxpayer, and me, the taxpayer and school children are not always the same of a private banker who's looking to make a big payday. So I think this is a trend. Your first question, what can we, the citizens, do? Well, if you're against this kind of trend, you should not vote for this mayor. You should vote for somebody else. You should vote for a different trend.
You should vote for the non-banker candidate.
Yeah, then figure that in. I think, you know, I mean, there must be at least one on the ballot.
I'm not sure there are any others on the ballot. Not that I can think of.
There's 10 candidates. The two likeliest or best known that have the greatest shot of making the runoff, at least at this point, an alderman named Fioretti, who's a lawyer and essentially made his money before he got to the city council as a trial lawyer. He's not a banker. And Jesus Chuy Garcia, who is a Cook County Board Commissioner and has been in government for years. Before that, there was this brief stint when he was running it, or not brief stint, I think it was like maybe 10 years where he was running a Chamber of Commerce in Little Village here in the Southwest Side. So he's not a lawyer.
He's not a banker.
I'm sorry, he's not a banker. Alderman Robert Shaw, my old friend, he's not a banker. So you have your choice if you're looking strictly for non-bankers. Definitely you should reconsider this whole notion of who runs government and what's for the best interest of taxpayers.
It used to be vote out the incumbents, vote out the bankers.
They've taken over, Dave. It's like the weeds in my backyard.
On that note, Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions for future interviews. You can tweet us or give us a Facebook post about that. Search for Inside Chicago Government or email us via contact@shygov.com. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.